Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
And happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. This is episode number 87, getting closer to that magical number 100. I'm your host, Beam Weeks, and with me, as usual, is Mr. Stephen G. How you doing tonight, Stephen?
I am just nifty and keen. I'm sitting here thoroughly antimicrobial scrubbed because I've got surgery in the morning, and they've had me for 2 days scrubbing and scrubbing and scrubbing, so apparently they don't like germs during surgery.
But, no germs.
Man, beautiful day down here. I got into the mid-80s today. Sunny, just nice. I got up early this morning to go check because we've got purple martins. We hang gourds on a pole so that they can build nests in them. And then they do us the favor of getting rid of all the mosquitoes. I mean, I can go out here at dusk and sit next to the lake in the evening and never feel a mosquito at all. But we had to move the gourds this year because it's getting kind of hard for us to climb up on the boathouse. So I wanted to get up early and check and see if they were using them or if they'd rejected them. Apparently, they've decided to use them because they were buzzing around and building nests and trying to fight off the starlings who are trying to take over. But what really fascinated me is we've got four wood duck boxes. Wood ducks are little miniature ducks. They're even prettier than mallards. They're spectacular coloration, but you could hold them in the palm of your hand. They're tiny little things. And these four boxes, they're deep boxes that they lay their eggs in. And I counted 28 wood ducks out there literally
wow.
waiting in line on the pier for a turn to go lay eggs in those boxes while the males were in the water circling around guarding the things. We open those things up. Sometimes there'll be 40 eggs in those things just stacked
wow.
foot deep. And most of them will hatch and the babies will climb out and everything will be cool. But that's fun. And then, you know, behind those were the mallards. And of course, we've got thousands of coots. We're swimming all around those. The starlings and the martins were swirling around. Had a 4.5 foot tall blue heron who hunts here every morning, standing at the edge of the water. Except this time, another one flew over and joined him. It's the only time of the year you'll see two herons hanging out together. That's because they're in love. So... it's that time of the year, but we got five gooses that have built nests next door. So they were out there wandering around, eating the grass and looking at me like daring me to do something about it. We got two bluebird boxes, and both of those had pairs of bluebirds building nests. And, you know, we had cardinals and blue jays and robins and a pair of yellow finches I saw this morning. It was really pretty. It was kind of funny because I was sitting on the deck watching all this, and all of a sudden everything disappeared. Started flying away. All the coots disappeared under the boathouses. The wood ducks took off. Everything's just like gone. And it's like, uh-oh, what's going on? And here they came, a pair of bald eagles hunting over the cove. And it's amazing how they know they're coming long before I can spot them. And they just all disappear, take off. But luckily,
wow.
the eagles were after fish in the lake. They went out and each of them got a brim and flew off with them. So that's pretty cool. Get up, look at the birds.
Yeah, I got up and looked at snow, not today, but the other day. We had snow the other day. Sunday, we didn't get out of the 20s. And this is just a few days after we hit 72. Sunshine and just a beautiful day. And then a few days later, we didn't get out of the 20s. Today, we made it to 52. So we had
Ooh,
that.
Nice.
And it rained all
yeah.
day, but you know, that's all right. Spring is
well,
coming,
In Michigan, if you get up early enough, you might not see the wood ducks out there laying eggs in the boxes. But if you look east, you can see Venus these days. And Venus is spectacular right now.
Yeah.
It's real close to the Earth, and it's so big, so bright, so vivid, you can see the disc shape of it. And catch that with the crescent moon and Mars off to the right. It's a pretty sight in the sky at night.
All right. Listeners, if you want to join tonight's show, if you've got a question or a comment for our guest, and I see we've already got a phone caller waiting in the queue, or if you want to join us on Twitter, here's how you can do all of that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now and join us on air or tweet us with the hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the Body and we'll read your comment or question live. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group.
Hey.
Yeah.
So, Robert G. Willisscroft's book, The Ort Federation, To the Stars. The second Ort Chronicle is now out. It has been released. It is doing very well out there. The intention was to sell that for 99 cents in the ebook edition until the release date. And we went in and changed it. And last I looked, it still hadn't changed. So unless it's changed just in the last couple of hours, go out there and get your 99 cent copy. Let's take advantage of Willisscroft.
I did.
Yeah. Get his book cheap. While you can, but still, you'd rather have a print copy anyway. So get out there and order your copies. We also have Eerie Charms of the Short Story, Fantasy, Mystery, and Horror, which is in pre-sale right now. The release date's April 14th, and the last of the print editions are starting to populate now. So all of your editions should be available at all retailers tonight or tomorrow or real close to that. So get out there and get your copy of Eerie. We're still working on the trailer for that. We got the voiceovers coming in probably tomorrow, but obviously we couldn't get it on for tonight's show. So Eerie Charms of the Short Story by Patricia A. Guthrie. Get out there and check that out. And The Ort Federation by Robert G. Willisscroft. And that, by the way, is the sequel to Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, the first Ort Chronicle. You might as well get both.
Yeah. So get out there and do that. The Eerie Charms, I can vouch for that. What a fantastic collection of short stories. Now, listeners, if you missed last week's incredible, fun-packed crossover show, you can find our end of it in our archives. And you can find any show. If you miss any of our shows, just go to the archives, and here's how you can find those.
If you miss a show, find us in the archive in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, and stephengees.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
Stephen, do you know where to find the Carters archive? What's the name of their YouTube channel?
Oh, geez. I put that on your name, not on me.
Yeah, but you didn't write the channel down. I can come up.
Meet the Author?
Yeah, Meet the Author. Okay. Find that on YouTube go check it out, that angle, their side of the show, and then come and check out our side of the show in our archive.
Yeah, did Sam put that in the newsletter today?
I believe he did.
Okay, so you should be able to check the newsletter to find the repeats of those podcasts. And I'm looking right now at YouTube. I think it's Meet the Author.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's what it is as well. I'm subscribed to it. I can go check my subscription list, but I don't have that open right now.
Huh, and I am not finding it.
All right.
Okay. Well, rely on the newsletter for now, and next time we'll have a little bit more specifics about where to send you. But it's Joan and Rob Carter and Carter Novels. And Carter Novels is their website. And I know you can get at their podcast through there, too. But
yep. We
had a lot of fun, and we appreciate the Carters having me on. They felt guilty, so they're going to invite Beam on next.
I'll be on June 1st, I believe it is. I will be on there. So.
Let me mark my calendar.
Yeah, and that's going to end up being another crossover, for me at least, because as soon as I'm done on their show, I got to jump right into the pilot seat over here. So... that's going to be a fun time.
Speaking of archives.
I already played the archive bumper.
Oh, really? We're not up to it yet.
Yeah, okay. I just did. I did the crossover, and I said, if you missed ours, here's how you can find it. Boom. And then
when
we came out of it, I asked
print
you.
Print bestsellers. Okay. Print bestsellers. We've got... the same ones that we've been seeing lately. Number one and two are There Must Be Something in the Water, Anthology of the Fourth Generation, Descendants of Green Pond After the Emancipation, with the hardcover outselling the softcover.
Which is amazing.
Hello, Chattanooga, Famous People Who Have Visited the Tennessee Valley. Both editions of that book are in the top five, with the hardcover outselling the softcover. And then in the fifth slot for a couple of days, we had the Ort Federation, Robert G. Willis Cross book, which just got released this week. And it got up there, shine, made some noise for a couple of minutes, and then slid back down to six. And in the meantime, The Rise and Fall of a Construction Giant, The History, People, and Stories of CFW Construction, which is based in Fayetteville, Tennessee, rose to the number three slot. So I don't know what stirred up more interest in that this week. Day before yesterday, I traveled to Tennessee and had lunch with the author of that, Dick Ferrer Jr., and he introduced me to several other authors who have books that they wanted to get published too. So it was a good, fruitful lunch. But he's out there hustling it, and there's still a lot of interest in it, and he managed to get back up under number three on the print seller bestseller list again this week. So congratulations to all of you. And I do want to mention that Robert G. Willis-Croft's book got into the top couple hundred on Amazon, and that's out of hundreds of thousands, in particular in the science fiction category. So that book is doing very well. Get over there and check that out. Check out Icicle, the first edition.
All right, yeah. Now, listeners, next week, as Stephen just mentioned, he's going to be having surgery, so he's not going to be on live next week, but I will be here. And we're going to do a G's Writer How-To episode. This is a live discussion with pre-recorded Stephen G's segment on creating characters and then writing realistic dialogue for them. And we're hoping for some discussion, so call in and tweet. I won't be able to take the calls during the recordings when they're playing, but in between those recordings, I will be glad to take your phone calls. You can ask your questions, and we'll get it out there. If I'm able to help you with an answer, I will do that. If not, you'll get your question out there, and Stephen can send me a message, text me a message or something from his recovery bed. So, if you would like to subscribe to our newsletter that we just spoke about, this has got all the links and books coming out and the link to this show and just all kinds of really cool stuff in there, but it's not too long. It's not going to take you all morning to read it. It's a 15-minute read. But here's how you can sign up for that.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
All right, let's get to our guest tonight. A longtime reader, best-selling author D. Wallace Peach started writing later in life after the kids were grown and a move left her with hours to fill. Years of working in business surrendered to a full-time indulgence in the imaginative world of books, and when she started writing, she was instantly hooked. In addition to fantasy books, Peach's publishing career includes participation in various anthologies featuring short stories, flash fiction, and poetry. She's an avid supporter of the arts in her local community, organizing and publishing annual anthologies of Oregon prose, poetry, and photography. Peach lives in a log cabin amongst the tall evergreens and emerald moss of Oregon's rainforest with her husband, two owls, a horde of bats, and the occasional family of coyotes. Welcome to the show, B. Wallace Peach. Diana, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Hi, Beam. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Diana.
We are so
glad
to have
to be
you here. We've been wanting to have you on for a while now, so we are glad. Now, you're living up in Oregon in the rainforest. Any Sasquatch sightings?
No. We live in, according to my grandson, we live in the in Condera in the Dragonwood, and we do have trolls out back on our hillside.
All right.
Yes. And gnomes.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, have you always lived in Oregon? If not, where are you originally from, and what's your journey to Oregon?
I'm originally from New England. I lived there until about 12 years ago, and I moved to Oregon to be near family. Most of my family lives out here. My daughter was considering starting a family, which she's done, and we wanted to be nearby. We miss Vermont a lot, but Oregon is very similar. So we're content. We're content to be in this lush green wilderness.
Well, you went from cold winters to cold winters.
Well, you know what? Oregon has pretty, we're in the coastal range, and our winters are pretty mild here.
Oh.
So we get maybe a couple inches of snow every year around Christmas, and that's about it. So it's not too bad. It's nice not to have to shovel snow.
Yeah.
And it's nice. Yeah. And it's nice that it's not negative 50 degrees outside.
Yeah, that's Michigan. I mean, I could handle, hey, we get snow once a year, and that's a couple inches at Christmas. That's gone. I could handle that.
Yeah.
But no, we get dumped on and it's here. And then spring shows up and more snow comes with it.
Yeah. I don't miss that part of it. Snow is pretty, but it's a lot of work.
So back in Vermont, what kind of kid were you? Were you into reading and writing at an early age, or is that something that came along a little bit later? What other kinds of interests did you have too?
Yeah, I did a lot of reading. We spent our summers in a little cabin on a lake without electricity, so we had no entertainment other than reading. And my dad would go to the used bookstore in town and buy bags full of nickel paperbacks. And he was an avid fan of fantasy and sci-fi, and so my goal during those summers and those vacations was to read a book a day. And I would raid his bookshelves. The walls were lined in our cabin, were lined with bookshelves. And so it made sense when I started writing that I would kind of gravitate toward those genres. And other than that, pretty normal childhood, did well in school and but reading was a big part of the way we spent our time, reading and playing board games.
Yeah, the used bookstores. I remember the used bookstores. We don't have too many of them in this area anymore, but what I do is every summer, I spend the summer going garage selling and or yard sales, whatever. And I get, they're not nickel. You can get them for a quarter, for 50 cents. I come out of there literally with bags of books every time I go out, and CDs. That's where I get a lot of my music from.
Yeah. It's I don't have as many physical copies of books now. I just tend to load up my Kindle and read
e-books. I've got
that
too.
But yeah. But it was nice having just shelves and shelves and shelves of paperbacks to browse. That was, you know, I still remember what that felt like to pull out books and read the back covers and see if I was interested. So, good memories there.
What kind of board games did you play?
Oh, we were big. We were big fans of Risk. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah. I used to play a lot of
Risk. Yeah, World Domination.
Yeah.
That and card games. My dad would teach us how to play blackjack, and we would play for matchsticks. Just good memories of that stuff.
Now we have some comments on Twitter. I don't know if you want to throw some of these out real quick, Stephen, that way we don't get too far behind.
I'm seeing Verwayne and Helen. Verwayne is saying it was 85 here in the armpit of Florida, but we have some heavy rain coming in late tonight. Yeah, we do in Alabama here too, expecting tornadoes. Says, we are glad to hear you are recovering, at Stephen G's. Well, ask me again tomorrow.
We got Marlena Smith. She says, Voice of Indie podcast is going live now with author D. Wallace Peach. Thanks for the support, Marlena.
And Helen Burrell says,
An
aside to Stephen G's, Fig Publisher, sending you prayers for your OR adventure tomorrow. If the surgeon tells you you must sit on the side of the bed a few hours post-op, then you must walk down the hall with your nurse, ask him, doctor, may I lie down for the operation?
Now,
thanks, Alan.
1.0 says, I read that Diana lives in a log cabin with her husband. How incredible. I'd like to ask her if her forest setting influenced her writing.
Ooh.
There's a question.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I think it does. I grew up kind of in the New England forest, and forests play a big role in most of my books. I have some books on the sea, and I have some books in kind of a desert area, and some on, I have one in a jungle, but most of them are forest and mountains, and that's what I'm familiar with, so, and that's what I love, so I tend to like creating stories in those settings. Thanks, Gwen.
Yeah.
Robert Willis Croft is enlightening us again. He is saying, I believe a group of bats is called a cauldron of bats. Just saying.
A what? A what?
A cauldron of bats.
A cauldron
oh,
of
good.
Bats.
Oh, well, I definitely have a cauldron.
Yeah. Stephen, you want to read Helen's other one? And
Helen Burrell, PhD. She says, about D. Wallace Peach. Hey, my Fresh Ink Group buddies, here's a peachy keen writer. Such variety. Go look. See how varied and gifted these works are by one artistic writer. I am overwhelmed. Can't wait to dive into some of them soon. And she's got a link there so you can go find Diana's books.
Oh,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then Gwen Plano says, I love Diana's off-grid summer adventures. Did this foster her imagination?
Yeah. Well, I've now that my husband's retired, we're doing a little bit of traveling, and I tend to take pictures and then write short poems for them. I try not to do a lot of heavy writing when I'm vacationing because it's a nice break from, 12 hours a day of sitting at the computer. I'm heading to the Grand Canyon in a couple months for the first time, so looking forward
Ooh.
To that.
First time, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have some Grand Canyon poetry when I get back.
It's a big one. You can't
yeah.
miss it. If you're facing the wrong
yep.
direction, have somebody turn you around, point to which way it is.
Yeah.
Big old hole in the ground.
So, Bean,
yeah.
you want to roll the first commercial and then go to our call?
Sure.
This is the prequel to the Orc Federation.
Now, introducing book one in the new series by master sci-fi storyteller Robert G. Willis-Croft, Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle. Dying of prostate cancer, wealthy entrepreneur Braxton Thorpe is frozen in hopes of someday being revived and cured. That's when he discovers a threat to the entire solar system. But he has a problem. He's dead. He awakens to find himself uploaded into an electronic matrix. Exploring beyond the matrix and the larger global net, he discovers the Oort, a distributed electronic entity older than humanity, with an unnerving secret. Aliens wiped out nearly all life on Earth once, and they are coming back to do it again. The mathematical entity that is Thorpe has to find a way to convince humans of this threat, and in time to do something about it. But how? And what? Will Thorpe's carefully assembled team have any shot at saving the world? Will the Russians and Chinese help or betray? And who uploaded the cat? Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle, is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, all ebook formats, and now as an audiobook narrated by Trenton Bennett, including music and sound effects. Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
Ooh, Get your copies now, and then you can get the ebook of the second book for only 99 cents, is what I hear.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to jump on the phone lines here and take this call. Come on. There we go. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. You're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello, caller.
My name's Heather.
Hi, my name's Heather.
I'm in Oregon also.
Hi, Heather.
I've read a couple of Diana's books and enjoyed them immensely. I was wondering if she could talk a little bit about how she constructs the backdrop for the characters to jump off the pages from.
Ooh.
She has a wonderful way of making the story about pertinent social complexities, but the backdrop really seems to make it, and they're so diverse, from seafaring to dragons and magic to dystopian environments, and I wondered if she could talk a little bit about that.
All right. That's
Thanks,
a good
Heather.
Endorsement.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in, Heather.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know how I come up with those. I usually start with a theme or a dilemma, and then it kind of seems to fit into a setting. For example, my latest book is I wanted to do a story about mermaids, so of course I end up with a seafaring setting, and then what I'll do is kind of look at characters and setting kind of as an outline, and then I think about all the different ways that I can not repeat what other people have done. So I'll look at my characters' physical descriptions and try to do something different with that. So I have main characters with who are not all gorgeous and handsome. I have a main character with a huge birthmark on her face. The main character on the book I'm writing right now has a very crooked body and kind of gnarled fingers and walks with a limp and is in constant pain. And these are fantasy books. And then I have, I try to look at settings, and most of my settings are fairly recognizable. There are cities and towns and villages, but I try to add details to give them some distinct qualities. I don't want the reader to get lost in descriptions and not understand what they're seeing, or to have to spend a lot of text explaining, well, you know, that this is what this is. So they tend to be recognizable, but I'll look at features right down to the shapes, to the architectural shapes, or the type of food. I'll do something different, usually a few different details with clothing, things to make the world really unique and pop. But for me, it also has to be, it has to make sense. It's not just for the, it's not just for the interest. So, for example, in my Catling's Bane series, it's kind of all tied together. The elements of the land are connected to the plot of the story, and they all kind of work together. There's not a lot there that's kind of arbitrary, if that makes sense. I don't know if that answers the question. It was a good one. Made me think.
Oh, well, I think that everything is so visual in how you describe things. You can really picture what the person's doing and where they're at, and I just think that makes the story come alive. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling, Heather.
Thank you.
Right.
And now, just as a little reminder that whole notion about creating characters is one of the topics on next week's podcast.
I was just going to bring that up. Just going to bring that up. Because I find that fascinating, Diana, that you make these characters not perfect. They're not visually perfect beauties. They're gnarled and they're crooked and they got birthmarks. And that's, to me, is reality. And that's what I think makes them jump off the page. And I was going to say that. And Stephen will be talking about that very thing on next week's show. Tune in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then call it.
And to Heather's point, I really enjoy writing. I enjoy writing descriptions. I enjoy creating a sense of atmosphere. I have to be, it's one of the things that I have a very good beta reader who tells me if I'm going overboard. But for Heather, it seems to be working, which is awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Robert Williscroft threw out on Twitter, he says, sorry, guys, the Orc Federation is back at $2.99 noon today.
Ah.
So if you guys didn't get it, I got it at 99 cents. It's sitting on my Kindle.
It's
so.
A great buy at $2.99.
Yeah,
great buy at $2.99.
It's still a steal right there. So,
but me announcing it is probably what got it changed back. I think there's some kind of universal karma that Amazon's plugged into or something.
Now, Diana, let's kind of get into your writing process. I mean, what's that like?
Sure.
You know, when do you do it? Do you have like a set word count that you do each day? And with the your characters with the flaws and whatnot, or you know, maybe they're not flaws, maybe that's the true beauty mark as somebody that's a little old. Are any of these based on people that you know or that you've met or seen in real life?
No, they're all I don't think, well, I have one book that I kind of based loosely on actually myself and my brothers. That one is Sorcerer's Garden, which is my only book that's mm-hmm. kind of takes place in contemporary Oregon. All my other characters are completely made up. I worked for a long time as a counselor. A mental health counselor, and so people, the things that make people tick are the kind of the psychological drama I really enjoy. I like, I kind of believe that we are emotional beings at our core, and so a lot of my characters have internal struggles that they're trying to work on, as well as Heather mentioned, kind of overall themes of that affect us currently and have affected human life through centuries, elements of power and violence and love and protecting the people we love and, you know, just all of those pieces, as well as because it's fantasy, I like to expand things a little bit, like kind of exploring vanity or exploring kind of the psychic elements of souls or things like that. So anyway, all that kind
yeah.
of stuff.
Yeah, people are complex, I think, you know, in real life we're complex creatures, and I think people who can create those kind of characters that are complex and not one-dimensional, those are the characters. Because that's where I have fun with that kind of stuff. If I'm reading somebody else's work and they've done a good job with it, man, that makes the book that much better.
Yeah, I'm definitely a character-driven reader, and so I think that's reflected in my books too. A great plot is good, but if the characters aren't grabbing me, then the plot isn't going to grab me unless the characters grab me. You know, the characters are most important to me as a reader and therefore as a writer.
Okay, yeah. Now,
you asked a little bit.
Actually, you know, back to my original question, your writing process, do you set aside a certain time during the day, and do you have like a word count that you hope to hit each day?
Yeah, I get up at 4 in the morning, and I start writing at 4:30 with a cup of coffee.
Wow, I'm still sleeping.
Start early. I start early like that so that by noon I already have 8 hours of writing in. And I'll generally go until about 4. So I write 12 hours a day, and sometimes in 12 hours I will get 1,500 words. Sometimes I'll get 2,000 words. I tend to, I'm a very slow writer, and I tend to kind of edit as I go, and I go back and forth depending on what's developing in the story. I might have to go back and tweak a few things and then move forward. So I'm a incredibly slow writer, which is why I write 12 hours a day. And I can usually produce a book every 6 months, I think, is pretty 6 to 8 months. I can put out a 280-page book.
I'm averaging every 2 years.
So when
well,
does it go?
Start at 4 in the morning, Beam.
When does it go to your beta
to
reader?
That.
Do you send it pieces to your beta reader as you're going, or do you wait until it's all done and send it all at once? How do you do that?
I wait till it's done, because I am always going, something will happen on page 27 and I need to go back to chapter 27, and I'll have to go back to chapter 3 and make some adjustments. So in order to keep the book in order to keep the book cohesive and making complete sense, I don't send it out until it's done. The other thing I do is when I write trilogies or tetralogies, I write the whole entire thing before anybody looks at it, before it goes to beta readers, and I publish it all at once. So I have a couple 4-book series, I have a 3-book series, I have a 2-book series, and then a bunch of standalones. But all my series I will write completely, edit completely before I publish it, so that readers are never lost. Everything is there in the first book that they're going to need in the last book. So anyway, I kind of obsess about those details. So I have a kind of a different process compared to most people, I think, in that regard.
Yeah. You want to name your beta reader and give a shout out and throw some credit out there?
Yeah, she's more of a critique partner, Kathleen Townsend, and she's a wonderful writer and a wonderful critique partner, because she's really honest with me, and I love getting I really love getting criticism and getting really sharp feedback about what's not working. I love hearing what's working, and I love hearing when she likes a particular scene, but what's really helpful to me is what she doesn't like, so that I can so I can work on those sections and fix them. Yeah, it doesn't help me to grow as a writer to know everything I'm doing well. What helps me to grow as a writer is to know everything that I'm doing poorly, I guess, everything that needs to be fixed. So she's been a fantastic support. And
go, Kathleen.
I'm going to be sending her my current manuscript in about 3 days. So
all right.
She's ready and waiting.
Now, on Twitter, Marlena Smith says, "I love the way you talk about your characters and creating them. flaws make them unique and more realistic. And Verwaine Greenhost bragging that he got his Orc Federation at 99 cents and that his wife is going to be reading it next. Gwen Plano says, I'm impressed with how Diana incorporates the psychological dimensions into her characters. Beam, you're great at doing the same. Well, there you go, Beam. And you want to grab the other Marlena comment?
Yeah, and Marlena says, you're so dedicated, Diana. I'm not only impressed, but also a little jealous. You and me
there
both, Marlena. I might have to try that 4:30 a.m. Writing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so you definitely. It's a little right into the night. I'm definitely a morning person, and then I kind of burn out and veg and watch television in the evening. So.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, so and another thing about Marlena's comment, if I can just say about characters, is I really like nuanced villains. I get pretty bored with flat villains who are just pure evil. And so that's another really fun part of creating characters is making your good guys flawed, but also making your bad guys have good qualities that, you know, because that's, I think, the way most people are, really. And some of my villains really believe that they are doing the right thing. And that's kind of fun, too, when what they're doing, which they believe is the right thing, is not what my protagonists believe is the right thing. So it's kind of fun.
That's a good point. Some of the best villains, bad guy characters, I've read or seen in, you know, movies or television shows, are the guys that, you know, they're bad, they're evil, but there's still something, a little humanity to them that you can kind of empathize with. Not the things that they're doing, but they're human. And, you know, like, I guess one that comes to mind is, I don't know if you ever watched The Walking Dead. Watches The Walking Dead, the character of Negan, this is the guy that's, you know, man, I remember when he first showed up, I wanted them to whack him, kill this guy and be done with him. And as he's come along, he's actually, you know, it's a good thing they didn't, because at this point they kind of need this guy.
He's had
that's
a great character arc.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I think that's fascinating. I really like nuanced villains. I like villains who, you know, you love to hate and you hate to love and all that kind of stuff. It's fun.
Yep. Yeah. So you want to roll a commercial and take a call?
Sure thing. This is for the latest from Robert G. Willis-Cross, the Second Orc Chronicle.
Now, from science fiction master Robert G. Willis-Croft, the Ort Federation, to the stars, the Second Ort Chronicle. As the Ort Federation becomes a major force in the solar system, Braxton Thorpe passes the Federation chairmanship to former U.S. President John Butler. Thorpe's group offers humanity virtual immortality, but Isidore Orlov and his Udakhni Enterprises oppose their every move. While Thorpe's group terraforms Mars for more living space, the Mars Reds prove formidable as resistors. If the Asterian starship fighter pilots are released, will they align with Phoenix or Udakhni? And who will develop the right FTL technology? In this tense space adventure, Thorpe, his team, and Max the Tabby Cat travel to Proxima Centauri and beyond to the Aster system, 84 light years distant. Will Thorpe bring together humans and Asterians in their quest for intergalactic travel? Will long life prove more than mere humans can handle? Grab Icicle, a Tensor Matrix, the first Oort Chronicle, and continue the journey with the Oort Federation to the stars. Proudly published in all print, digital, and sensory-enhanced audiobooks by Fresh Ink Group.
Fresh Ink Group, enhancing those sensories.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to take a phone call. We got a caller that's been on hold for a while, so we will go ahead and go to this caller. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. You're on the air. What is your name and where are you calling from? Hello, caller. Hello, caller. Going once. Going twice.
Is that me?
There you are.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me take you off hold. Yes, that's you.
Okay.
Hello.
Yes, I'm sorry. I've been on mute because I've got background noise.
Okay. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Toby from Vernonia.
Hello, Toby. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I live close to Diana, and I was thrilled to be one of the little writing group when she was first just starting to publish. So I was pretty excited about the podcast, and I have no real deep questions, just, you know, wanted to throw my hat in the ring and say, hey, I love her writing, and I love her descriptions, and I'm not a great critiquer because I'm sort of in awe of anybody that can write that much and that prolifically.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in, Toby.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, when I first started reading Diana's work, I'd never been a fantasy, you know, fantasy, that type of fiction had not been my genre. But her writing was so beautiful that I just totally got hooked on all of this absolutely, you know, fascinating lands of a lot of post-apocalyptic things, but with the characters so well developed and the descriptions of the scenery, even though it was complete fiction, I could visualize so well what she was writing about. So anyway,
Toby and I were in a critique group, and Toby's quite a talented writer too. So we were
all right.
We kind of started that journey together.
Published?
Yeah.
Yeah, are you published,
me?
Toby?
Well, I write mostly nonfiction, and I'm published monthly in our local paper on a history column on Vernonia, and I've had a couple of other books that I was the author, but not, you know, published under my own name. We did one under the name of our museum that was a Vernonia history. I tried my hand at fiction, and ever since, well, eighth grade, I won a prize for my short story, but when I tried to go back to fiction, it was just too great a challenge, and I'm too undisciplined, so I pretty much stick to expository writing.
Yeah.
So.
But you live close to Diana. Do you live close enough that you've ever seen the trolls or the gnomes that we keep hearing about?
Oh, of course. All kinds of things. And, of course, being a Portlander, it was fun when the Sorcerer's Guard, that was the one that was at Pittock Mansion, right?
Yeah, Sorcerer's Garden,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that
takes
one
place in Oregon, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm just going to continue listening to your podcast, and I can put myself back on mute so you don't have to listen to the background noise here, and just want to say huzzah.
Yeah.
Well,
thanks for calling in, Toby.
We appreciate that.
Okay. Enjoying listening.
Remember to subscribe to the newsletter at freshinkgroup.com so you can find out about upcoming guests too.
All right. I will
yeah.
I will get the details. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
So you want to run one more ad here, and then let's just dive into this long list of books by D. Wallace Beach?
Yeah.
Every person has a private life and a secret self. This is true of those we know and people we only know because they are famous. Discover fascinating, intimate, clever, witty, poignant, insightful tales from a diverse roster of notable women who dare reveal both the unknown and the previously undisclosed. But these are not gossipy tales. No, they are personal, anecdotal, always meaningful stories for quiet reading, sharing aloud, even performing from the stage. compiled by Detroit playwright Jay Ashlooney, Whoopi Likes Her Bacon Crispy, 65 fascinating excerpts from the memoirs of famous and infamous women, is illustrated with whimsical portraits that capture these remarkable celebrities at their best. Choose your own from laminate hardcover, softback, and digital editions, all proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Come away with a richer appreciation of these talented women and smile for permitting them to entertain you in unexpected and delightful ways.
All right.
That's also a perpetual bestseller that we're actually selling more hardcover copies than softcover copies. It's the world has turned upside down. And over on Twitter, Robert G. Willis-Croft with a play on words here says, you should see the gnomes, N-O-M-E-S, or is it domes on Mars?
Yeah, we were just dealing with the domes on Mars in the audiobook.
That's right, we were.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, hissing air when it got torn.
Hissing air, yeah. And an explosion and all kinds of cool stuff.
All kinds of cool sounds.
All right.
So, Diana, I'm looking at a long list of books here.
A whole bunch of them.
Bunch of series. Do you mind just kind of, we just run through these and you give us a quick little what each book is about and try to get some interest and see if we can move some out there. Now, you've already talked a bit about The Sorcerer's Garden. You say that takes place in Oregon. And what's that about?
That takes place in Oregon and the... It's a book within a book. So there is a young woman, Madeline, who starts reading to a young man who was in a kayaking accident, and he's actually in a vegetative state. And she's reading to him as she's hired by the family, and she's reading to him, and she decides to read to him a manuscript that he was working on, which only had 6 chapters done. And as she gets to the end of the 6 chapters, there's more chapters, and she finds herself written into the book. And basically the theme of the book is that this young man's story was never finished. And so she helps him. She, as well as the young man's brother, become main characters in this story. And as the story progresses, real life starts overlapping with the book life, and the two kind of get tangled together, and it ends up being a pretty wild tale. It's got a lot of kind of gruesome monsters in it, but it's also probably my most lighthearted book in terms of there's a lot of humor and the relationship between the three of them is, even though the young man is in a vegetative state, the relationship that they experience in the book is really heartwarming, I think so. So it's a multi-layered book that takes place in medieval times as well as modern times that start overlapping, and this book is writing itself and creating the story. So.
All right, tell us a little bit about The Ferryman and the Sea Witch.
That is my most recent book. It just came out last summer. And that book is the main character is a man named Callum. And as a young boy, he attempted to save the sea witch's daughter. And the sea witch, they're kind of part mermaid, part siren. They have... kind of interesting personalities. They don't think about things the way that humans do. And because he attempted to save her daughter, Panmar, the sea witch's daughter, even though he was unsuccessful, she's mad and she wipes out every single ship on the sea except she saves his life. And he's the only one who's allowed to sail across the deep. And he is the one connection between two different worlds, an island world and a world of kind of Hulk ships, and there's a whole bunch of secrets that get revealed, and rescuing adventures. It's the whole book really takes place on the sea. Callum is cursed in a way so that he cannot go on land. He is the only person who can cross the sea, but he also can't step on land. So it's it's got a lot of cannons and sea battles and it is getting pretty good reviews, and it's a standalone. It's under 300 pages, so it's a nice first book for people who want to see what my writing is like.
Cool. Now, the Shattered Sea Duology, that's the two books, Soul Swallowers, Book 1, and Legacy of Souls, Book 2?
Yeah.
What are those?
The idea behind that book was I was thinking about, well, what if, what if souls are real, first of all, which a lot of people believe? What if souls are real, and what if we could actually capture the essence of a soul at the time of death, so that, in the book, they wear soul catchers, and the soul catcher, everyone wears a soul catcher, and when the soul catcher dies, the person's soul is captured, and then people can ingest that soul catcher, which is the size of a pearl, and have that soul kind of within them. So, for instance, if a parent lost a child, that child would reside kind of in them, and they would share some kind of nebulous memories or talents or appreciation. So if you swallowed the soul of someone who enjoyed nature, you would have a greater appreciation of nature, that kind of thing. But in the book, people like most humans don't know where to stop, and there are people who swallow too many souls because they want those talents. They want those say military talents or those or they want the wisdom. But what happens is you have too many voices in your head, and so there's this element of madness that starts impacting some of the characters. And my main character, Raze, is someone who is living in this very difficult world, and in the whole series he only swallows two souls because he understands kind of the danger, but he also has to deal with a lot of power struggles. He's from a powerful family, and there are slavers, and there's a woman that he falls in love with, and he finally, his second soul, he swallows specifically in order to save the woman he loves. So that one is the name. People hear Soul Swallowers and they think, ooh, monsters, but it's really not that. It's more about what if you could, you know, swallow the soul of your grandmother and have her presence in your life, and her, if she was a painter, and you could, you know, you would pick up some of her skills, but then there's a bunch of people who just can't handle that responsibility very well.
That's a fascinating thing for me, because, I mean, I would be like swallowing Eddie Van Halen's soul and play guitar like Eddie Van Halen.
When he passed away,
that makes you appreciate him even more, because that talent is not something he can leave behind for somebody else. It's gone.
Right.
It goes with him. It leaves this world with him.
And in the book, if you have enough money, you can go and you can buy his soul catcher.
Ooh.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Let's change gears and do the Rose Shield Tetralogy. What's this all about? You got four books in there?
That's a four-book series. And the covers of this book are pretty cool. And the one for Catling's Bane, the first book, won a book design award. So that's kind of a cool thing about the book. And this book is kind of based on my thoughts about human beings as being really emotional creatures. We aren't rational as much as we are emotional. And I think a lot of our choices and decisions are based on emotional qualities versus really thinking things through. We add reason to it, but the motivation is always emotional. So in this book, there's a group of people called influencers who actually, through a series of processes related to this alien world where they are, where they live, where they were colonized ages ago, they have the ability to impact the emotions of other people. So they have a lot of power. They control kind of the masses, and they have a lot of responsibility, and they have a guild where they make sure that they don't mess things up. But there's this one girl, Catling, who is born with a birthmark on her face. And that birthmark, because of something that happens to her when she's young, gives her the ability to interrupt the influencer's power. And that, of course, sets this whole civilization on end, because the way that the influencers have been controlling everything and managing everything and controlling the royal houses is through influence, and all of a sudden their influence is interrupted and it's not effective. And they want to get a hold of Catling. The rebels who don't like the influencers want to get a hold of Catling. And the four books cover about 25 years of her life, and she grows in power, and the stakes continue to go up, and everything is kind of in chaos because people are defying the influencers, and the influencers are trying to exert their power. So it's anyway, that's what that book is about.
Yeah, sounds cool. Now, the first book of yours that I discovered was Myths of the Mirror, and that's book one of the Dragon Soul Saga, which is Myths of the Mirror, Eye of Fire, Eye of Blind, and Eye of Fire. Why don't you sell us some copies of that?
Yeah, that was the first series that I wrote. It was actually a series that was picked up by a publisher, and it's my sweetest books by far. It was kind of a book that I wanted to write for a lot of my clients, my counseling clients. So it's about making good choices and about respecting and honoring who you are as a person and realizing that you have light in you. And so there's this character, Connell, who really wants to control the dragons that are in this community of Taran Lee, and he wants to master the dragons, and he wants to be a dragon rider. And but in order to do that, there's a lot of brutality. The dragons are brutalized in order to make them submissive, and flying dragons involves a lot of pain for the dragons. And it's about Connell. The first book particularly is about Connell realizing that that's not what's required, and that he has always had the power to fly dragons without brutality. And in that process, it's a love story, and it's a good YA novel in a lot of ways. And the story continues. The first book can be read as a standalone. It can be read completely as a standalone. And then the three additional books are expansions of that story as the community expands across the sea, and there's seafaring and lots of dragons and lots of kind of evil people trying to control other people, and there's a lot of little bits of wisdom that I stuck in there. So it's definitely my sweetest book for people who don't like a lot of darkness. I consider myself overall a dark fantasy writer. But this one's not. That series is really nice.
Yeah, I was going to say I didn't get much dark fantasy out of that series. I thought it was just very nice. And like you say, sweet. It's just great characters, good story, and you know.
So that one's different than a lot of my others. And it was my first one and first published book. Yeah.
Okay, how about we move on to Unraveling the Veil series? I see we got Liars and Thieves, Allies and Spies, and Lords of Chaos.
A trilogy.
Yeah, this one was from last year, I think. And again, I wrote it all at once. And this is a book that has goblins, elves, and changelings in it. And I don't normally write with those kinds of characters. My characters are generally human. In fact, this is the only book where they aren't human. And basically, the Lord of Chaos is creating havoc in this world. And there's these three races: the goblins, the elves, and the changelings. And the Lord of Chaos has created a problem in the world, and the races start blaming each other for this problem. And so the situation never gets resolved. It continues to escalate as the different races are blaming each other. And as it turns out, a goblin, an elf, and a changeling have to try to solve this problem. They get themselves in a situation where they need to take an oath to figure out what's going on. And during that process, they have a lot of internal conflicts, but eventually they get it done. So it's and there's some interesting scenes, particularly different characters. Different readers like different characters. Some readers really like the goblin because he's kind of this serious guy. He's a half-breed goblin, and he's kind of serious and has he has secrets, and he has a little bit of a complex because he's not pure goblin. And the changeling is really a thief, and and he's very sneaky and kind of amoral in a way. And then the elf kind of feels a little bit superior until she gets taken down a notch and finds out some secrets about herself. So there's a lot of secrets and finagling in this book. And as the three races increase their conflict and the three characters have to overcome their differences in order to solve the problem.
So I'm looking at Sunwielder, The Bone Wall, and The Melding of Eris. Those are all standalones?
Yeah, Sunwielder is a time travel. My character, Griff, has an amulet that allows him to go back in time to some of the pivotal decisions in his life, and so that he can change his direction. The only thing is that he doesn't realize that it's happening. So Sunwielder is definitely an epic. It has a lot of war scenes. I would say that the war scenes are more kind of Roman type battles with phalanxes and no elephants.
No elephants.
No elephant. I used some of Hannibal's battles for it, but no elephants. But you know, huge trigger fish and
oh, I love trigger fish.
Yeah, and catapults and things like that, and hacking each other. So there's a lot of battles, but it's also a love story, and it's also, but mostly it's a time travel. So if you could go back, if you could go back to a particular point in your life and make a different decision, it would change the whole trajectory of your life. And so that's what happens to him over and over again in this book until he achieves a specific goal at the end. So he's constantly going back in time, sometimes more than once to one period until he makes the right decision and his life is allowed to move forward in this new track. So that one was an interesting one to write and took a lot of effort to keep track of. The Melding of Eris is the one about vanity, and this one is about what if humans could graft animal parts to their bodies.
Ooh.
Which you can see humans doing if they could, putting horns on their heads or snake skin on their, you know, or fur.
Large bat wings on their back.
Yeah, or leopard skin down your legs. And so people in this world have the ability, or they've discovered this this medicine that allows them not to reject other species' skin and nails and horns and teeth and all that kind of stuff. So they go through this process of melding, and it's all based on vanity. They meld fur to their backs, or they meld teeth to their arm bones, you know, depending on what look they're trying to get. And then they have kids, and because they have altered their DNA, basically, their kids come out as monsters. And so there's this desire, this character, Eris, who is born a monster and really wants to be human. And he gets a human skin and finds out after the fact that there is only one way to get human skin from. And so he spends, so the book is about him trying to right that wrong and destroy that process, which people don't, you know, the wealthy people who can afford to do all this don't want that change. And he does, and it creates a lot of problems for him and a lot of rifts with his family. And there's a lot of people who are forced into giving up their human skin in parts. To get a whole body would require skinning a person, but there's a lot of people who will give up parts of their skin, of their human skin, and so it's about vanity gone wild.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's,
and the boat, go ahead.
I was going to say, well, go ahead, if you can finish up that.
Yeah, I was just going to do the last one, which is the bone wall.
Bone wall.
Which is, yeah, that's my most gritty album. That's a kind of a sci-fi-ish, takes place in the future, and it's my most brutal book. I wrote it during the Iraq War, and I think it was during the Iraq War, and I was really mad, so I wrote a really brutal book, and it's not for everybody. I think it's a good book. I think it's an intense book, but it's definitely raw. So I'll leave it at that. It's about two sisters who are surviving in kind of this futuristic world where civilization has broken down, and it's kind of Walking Dead-ish without the zombies, but.
Ooh. Right. I'll take gritty.
Now, let's go from gritty to children's book. Grumpy Anna and the Grouchy Monsters, a children's space tale. You wrote a children's book amongst all these books.
Yeah, I did that because I needed a break from writing adult books. And so I wrote the verse. It's all in verse. And then I painted all the pictures for it. So it's all my artwork as well.
Cool.
Yeah, I did all the pictures are all acrylics. And I put together the book for my grandson. And it's about having a good attitude. Grumpy Anna and the Grouchy Monsters. She's very, very grumpy and grouchy, and then she decides that she's going to go to another planet, and she goes to another planet, and where there's grouchy monsters, and the grouchy monsters end up being afraid of her, and so she learns that her grouchiness isn't working for her, and that maybe it's better to just go home and not be grouchy, basically. But the verse is really kind of fun, and the pictures are pretty bright and have lots of grouchy faces on them.
Oh, we love grouchy faces.
Yeah.
And we have Jan Sykes, author Jan Sykes is in the audience now. She's out there promoting that you're still on. Everybody come listen to D. Wallace Beach. So thanks for joining us, Jan.
Thanks, Jan.
Yeah, definitely. So,
yeah.
Diana, do you have any examples where you've met a fan or gotten some kind of feedback, a letter or something like that kind of stood out to you?
Yeah, I had actually on that first book, Mists of the Mirror, I got a letter from a high school teenager who, it was a personal letter. It was lovely. And she said that not only that she loved the book, but that it was really meaningful to her. And that's the sweet book about kind of recognizing your own choices and your own goodness and the light inside you, and that you're deserving of a good things in your life. And she was really touched by that and wrote me a letter, and I just thought that was so wonderful when that happened.
Wow.
So, fantastic. Nice. That's always cool to hear that kind of feedback from people who, you know, take the time to read your books and all that. Do you have any advice for other authors? Somebody that's just starting out?
I would say I was a member of a critique group. A writing critique group in person for 5 years when I started out. We met every other week, and I got tons and tons and tons and tons of good advice and feedback, and I don't think I would ever have published without them. My first book, Mists of the Mirror, when I first wrote it, was horrible. It was horrible. It was like 800 pages, and it was boring, and it was full of tangents and head hopping. And that critique group, just over several years, slapped it into shape with me, and I found a publisher at the end of that. So my advice to new writers is, get feedback, and if you can do it in a group setting, you know, where you actually end up making friends as well, it's really rewarding, and your writing will improve, and because feedback is your friend. I can't say that enough, how important it is to get feedback and figure out what isn't working so that you can make improvements.
Yeah, in that case, the good feedback was not just about those books in that first series with Mists in the Mirror and what you wrote after that, but for the rest of your writing career. They shaped how you approach even the books that you're writing today and what a difference that can make.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the whole group setting, 20 odd years ago, I was in a group that was being taught by Mr. Stephen Gies here. And that was just a phenomenal experience because there was, I don't know, 15, 20 of us in there, and it was like sharing what you're writing with other people and then getting that feedback, which really shaped who I am as a writer now. That's great advice. If you're an author, a writer just starting out, then, you know, a lot of these libraries, your public libraries, they'll have these kind of writing groups. So, you know, look those
yeah.
up.
Yeah, and you know what? If they don't have one, make your own. Toby, who called in earlier, when I moved here, there wasn't a writing group in town. I had to drive about an hour to Portland, Oregon, to the city, which I was fine doing. But we also started a writing group in town that is I'm no longer part of, but it's still going. It's been going for 12 years, and I think they have like 12 members. So if for new writers, if you can't find one, and most writing chapters will have them, but if you can't find one, make one, you know?
Yeah.
Do it yourself.
Exactly. Start your own.
With Patricia A. Guthrie, even if it's only one person showing up, you can still accomplish a lot, have a lot of fun, and make a good connection and get some good feedback. Diana,
before we cut out of here, I want to throw this out here. Jan Sykes, author Jan Sykes on Twitter, she said, "What a great interview with Dee Wallace Peach. I did not know she had written a children's book."
There you go.
Jan, your grandchildren, you can get that book for your grandkids.
Yeah, it's a nice little book.
Yeah, cool. So normally, if people are trying to find an author and it's been a guest on our show, we can just say, hey, go to freshinkgroup.com, use the contact form. We'll make sure that any messages get passed along so that you can be connected. But how can people find you more directly? Do you have a website, a blog, a contact form somewhere? And then are you on social media, Facebook, Instagram? What are your handles? How do we track you down?
The best way to reach me is probably through my blog. It's mythsofthemirror.com. And there is a contact form on there, and it's a pretty active blog. I am on there a few hours every day, and I get tons of comments, and I always reply and have a lot of fun. So the blog is mythsofthemirror.com is my blog. I do have an author website. There's not a lot of activity there, but my books are there, and that is dwallacepeachbooks.com. And that's kind of it. I don't, between writing 12 hours a day and blogging, I don't participate in a lot of social media. So I don't, you know, so if someone wants to contact me, I'm just not there very often. So I would much rather visit with people on my blog where people can leave comments and I get back to them right away.
Cool. Well, the author is D. Wallace Peach. That's D period, W-A-L-L-A-C-E, P-E-A-C-H, spelled the same as the fruit, D. Wallace Peach. And normally I'd throw out a couple of book titles here, but there's just way too many of them to list, and we're just about out of time. So it was great having you on the show, Diana, and we'd like to have you back, especially when your next book comes out.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Thank you.
All right.
It's been fun.
So, listeners, next week, don't forget, it's the G's Writer How-To episode, and we're going to need participation because I'm going to be playing a couple of recordings and filling in the gaps. So you callers, call in or get on Twitter and give me questions, comments, anything to do with writing, and, I'll talk about it.
Great. And then the week after that, April 13th, our guest is going to be Andrea Wingler, who is the author of How to Start and Run a Food Truck Business in Florida. And she's working on others besides Florida, but it's a great, great book. And she's going to be on there to talk about it. And then after that?
After that, on April the 20th, is Kenneth Lindquist. He's written two driver education books, one for instructors and one for parents, and just a different kind of topic than we usually have, but tune in because that will still be interesting.
Yep. And thanks again, Diana. It was great having you on, and we look
Thank
forward
you,
to talking again.
Thank you, Beam. Thank you, Stephen.
All right.
And we will talk to everybody else, I will at least, next week. See you, everybody.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.